Hola, hello, bienvenido, and welcome to this episode of Uncle Rob, Everybody's Mentor, the podcast. I am so super excited to share with you the story of this young woman, Delia Cemental, from Mexico today. If you don't fall in love with her energy over the course of our conversation, you better check your pulse. This girl is an incredible dynamo of positivity, of optimism, of aspiration, and of frankly just hard work. We're going to take you into the life of this young woman who is an 8-year-old, stood with her feet firmly planted in the sand in a little tiny village in Sinaloa, Mexico, where she developed an unlikely friendship with a tiny, funny little animal from the sea known as the sea cucumber. And that friendship would change the course of her life and maybe the rest of our lives over time. Delia is going to show us what it's like to go from being that girl to being a student who left her family to study abroad long before most Latinas ever leave their family, to someone who's learned multiple languages, studied on multiple continents, become a scientist and an entrepreneur, all while being a mother of two, a wife, and a fierce activist for female entrepreneurship in Mexico and globally. So sit back, plug in, and enjoy the lessons that we're going to learn from our mentor for the day, Delia Cemental. Hello, hello, Delia. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Very sorry for all the technical issues.
It's okay. This is welcome to the world of podcasting, right? So it's okay. It's okay. So we're going right from the beginning. So again, I'm super, super stoked to have you and I have this opportunity to have this conversation today, because I know, having experienced you and your passion and your intelligence and your power firsthand myself, I know that our conversation is going to be inspiring to people all over the world as we share it with them. And so, again, I'm super humbled. Thank you for being here.
Yes, thank you. I'm also really honored that you invited me to your program, and I hope that this experience that I have lived through the last years of my life serves as an inspiration for young women that they are starting to study or they are starting their businesses. And I hope to inspire them not only to be entrepreneur, but also to be entrepreneur in science.
Right. There's the magical part of this conversation. I can't wait for us to get into a little bit more. Is you are not only a talented, reputable entrepreneur and risk taker, but you're a scientist, which is incredible, right? I mean, this is not the average combination of talents in most people that we run across in the world. So I'm super excited. So thank you again. So let me do. I'm gonna give our audience a little bit of background on how I think we met, right? And then you can kind of share your story, and your point of view as well. But so we were just not long ago, just a few months ago, in Chihuahua City in northwestern Mexico, at an investor event, and we were both there as kind of presenters and speakers. Right, I was there to give a talk to investors, and then you were there to be interviewed as a guest. And you got interviewed on stage by a friend of mine, a venture capitalist, a really talented woman from Texas, Juliana. And all I remember thinking was, I speak very little Spanish, and I understand, I understand only a little bit more than I speak. But I sat there and I was just in awe of you up on stage, because I could tell the passion that you had for your life's work. I could tell how intelligent you were about the subject you were speaking about. And I just thought to myself, wow, this is a super talented entrepreneur. And I remember running around the back of the room and asking a couple of the event organizers, you know, who is this young woman? Like, what is her story? And then the minute that it was over and you had walked out to the hallway, I immediately like made a straight line for the hallway. And I said, like, I've got to go say hi to her. I want to hear more of her story. So for me, today's conversation has kind of been bubbling for a couple of months since we had our little conversation in the hallway. But do you remember, you know, the meeting and kind of everything in Chihuahua in the same way, right? It was obviously a big moment for you that week.
Yes. I mean, that was the second time I helped to participate telling my story with Israel Pons. Israel Pons, he is the CEO of Angel's Nest Mexico, which is like a angels investor organizations.
Right.
They are doing like a great job joining all Mexican angel investors in order to put money in a very, very interesting projects. I mean, the work that they are doing is amazing because, you know, someone has to write the first check.
So, always.
Always. So I admire them, and I hope that soon I can join to the network. So there I have go. Been doing some angel investments by myself, but not like in a real serial stage. But sure. I want to get to that point.
No, it's a critical part. I talk often about it, and I've written about it in Mexico recently in some columns that I write for my friends over at Clica magazine. And I talked about exactly that, right? The idea that angel investment is kind of it's like the third leg of the three-legged table, right? It's absolutely important going forward.
Yes.
For the rest of the entrepreneurial system to be able to survive and grow, is we need really active angel investors. So it was a pleasure to meet you there. And then, as I said, I chased you down in the hallway. I was this crazy American guy. I was so eager to hear your story. And so now it's fun for us to be able to share it today. And that really brings us to kind of, you know, the whole purpose of this podcast, which we lovingly call Uncle Rob, Everybody's Mentor, the podcast, right? Is because I get to travel around Latin America. And I lived and spent time almost exclusively for the last couple of years. And I have the good fortune to mentor and hear the stories of literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of super smart, talented people of all ages from all places. And I thought, you know, the goal for this podcast is really always to, I like to call it, tell the uncommon stories of common people, right?
Yes.
And I think what we find in life is, and at least in my opinion, is that we're all much more similar, and we share many more things than we are different from one another.
Yes.
And so I really also believe that it is truly just everyday people, right? Not necessarily the exceptionally gifted or the exceptionally wealthy or the exceptionally skilled. Like it's just everyday people who work very, very hard, who dream big, and then put in much time and take great risk to further themselves, that wind up making the impact on the world that changes the world, right? And so to me, you're one of those people. Like you're just normal, everyday, talented Mexicana, and yet you have, through your own hard work and your own dreaming and your own studies and efforts and risks, like you have made yourself into this entrepreneur and scientist, and we'll talk about that. So it's a really cool story. I think, as you said, your story is not only going to inspire like young girls and young female founders and aspiring entrepreneurs, but honestly, I think you're going to inspire men and young boys too. I think your story is inspiring for anybody that wants to believe in themselves. So I want to just dive in. I'm going to ask you some questions, and we'll just kind of go through this. Please just tell the story, and I'll interrupt and you know, ask more questions as we kind of go along. And this is no different than if we were just sitting across from each other in a room. So
yes.
I think the first most important thing for everybody to hear from you is the simplest thing. Like, where are you from? Like where were you born, and where were you raised, and what was growing up like for you?
Okay. Well, I'm from a little, really little town at the south part of Sinaloa. Sinaloa is a state that is in the northwest of Mexico. It is most known because it's also the state of El Chapo Guzman. So I have the fortune that I was from Esquinapa. That's the name of the municipality. Okay. In Esquinapa, it was nothing but mangoes and shrimps and fish. So in this area, not any illegal stuff yet. So I grew up in this very, very small town, and it was not even university here, but You know, I since I was a little girl, I was not like like all my little friends. For example, when I didn't like to play with toys, with Barbies and that. Instead of that, I was behind my parents and I wrote to Santa Claus, please bring me a microscope. Bring me some chemical toys, like Mi Alegría. It was like the brand at that time of the chemical toys for kids and that. So I was always like trying to experiment and to go in the outside, to, because for me it was not only seeing things, but I wanted to explore them to see how was inside, how it works, how they live. I was like a really curious kid. So
yeah, that's what I was just going to say. So you've always had a very curious mind, obviously.
Yes. So when I was little, I just very, very quickly, I understood that I couldn't stay at my, sadly, I couldn't stay at my home, because if I wanted to get to achieve something else, I had to go outside and to study outside. So when I was 15 years old, I got like a scholarship to study the high school in one of the most reputed high schools in Mexico, which is Tecnológico de Monterrey. So I went abroad to study from my high school and so on. So
So let me ask that. How uncommon was that, right? I mean, were many of your, did many young girls at 15 have like leave your town to go to study at Tec de Monterrey, or were you really unique?
It was rare, because, you know, at that school, they only attend or really smart people or really rich people. So, you know, in Mexico, it is, we are like a tandem. You can find here people that is super rich. In fact, we have the third or the fourth, the richest guy in the world. So, and then we have the poorest people in the world. So, it's like, we don't have so much medium class. So, for me, and also in my states, there is a lot of macho families. So it was really, really uncommon that a little girl to go to study outside without being from a rich family. So, because my family is so much normal. My mother, she's a retired teacher, and my father, he used to work for the government. So,
so let me ask this. So there's the part that's unique and crazy and scary leaving, right?
Yeah.
But then let me ask about what happened on the other end. So now when you are this 15, 16-year-old girl from this small town in Sinaloa, and now you wind up in another city. And so you were in Monterrey, right? You went to Monterrey?
No, I was
The high school was first somewhere else.
I didn't want to scare so much to my family. So the first city that I went, it was to Mazatlan, so which is 1 hour and a half away from my small town. So then, of course, then I after my family get used to, then I went to study to Guadalajara, and then I went to Sweden, then to Spain, then to United States.
Let's go back to the mind of the 15, 16-year-old girl, right? So you knew early on that you were an explorer and that you were seeking kind of a bigger version of yourself. But still, when you wound up where you wound up, so when you first wound up in Mazatlan, you were still a 15 or 16-year-old girl.
Yes.
And alone on, you know, for the first time, not with your mother and your father and your family in Sinaloa. What was that like?
You know, at that time, it was like a really, a little bit lonely, because I was without my family. I was living with some friends, but it's not the same. I mean, at 15 years old, you're supposed to be still living. You're still supposed to be still raised by your family. So in case I was raising by myself. So I think that gave me like a lot, a high sense of responsibility to to manage my resources and everything, because I had to know how to live there. And also at that time, I remember that I received like a lot of, it was like expressions of wow, or that they made fun of me. Some of my peers at high school, because you know, at that time I said, you know, I'm never going to get married. I'm going to dedicate my life to science. I'm going to work for NASA or any other cool research center. So everyone was thinking, you know, this girl, she's very crazy.
But you knew you were chasing a dream at an early age.
Yes, I knew for sure that I wanted to dedicate my life to science. So at that time, I also, you know, I'm from a very a small town that is really close to the coast. Mm-hmm. So at that time, I get to know all the animal species in the sea.
Ah.
So my favorite, since I have memory, is sea cucumber. Because, you know, since very early age, I knew that they were capable to regenerate itself. So somebody
might say, when they write the movie of your life someday, they might show a scene of you standing on the beach with your feet in the sand and reaching in and seeing a sea cucumber.
Yes.
And then how that was destined to happen, that you were going to become this adult person that you have become.
Yes.
Right. It was meant to be. So you studied, you said briefly, let's kind of mm-hmm. flesh this out a little bit. So you wound up studying, obviously that began a journey, and you wound up studying abroad extensively. So you wound up studying
yes.
at different places, different schools, universities in Mexico. And then you left, and you even studied further in your studies in outside of Mexico. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that phase?
I think everything is about to be in the right place. So when I was studying my bachelor's degree, I was studying and working at the same time. I was working in the European Center. It was called Eurocentro, which is the European Commission office in Mexico. They have an office in Guadalajara. So yeah. I was first working as like a unpaid employee.
Yeah, like an intern of sorts.
Yeah, like an intern, like an internship there. Then they hire me for special projects. My boss, she was Paz Diaz Nieto, which is like an amazing and powerful woman. So I was working with her, and I had that time the opportunity to go to study at Sweden, a major degree in innovation. At that time, innovation, it was like a really innovative word.
Sure, right, because this
right
is
now,
what
is everywhere,
right?
Everyone is saying innovation and that. So,
what year was that? What year was that? Do we think that you went to Sweden?
It was 2005.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah, right. That's still, like you said, we were still 5 to 10 years away from innovation becoming
yes,
even a concept
yes,
in Latin America.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, exactly. So, of course, I mean, in Sweden, in Nordic countries, innovation is like in their DNA. So,
yeah.
And also United States and that, but not here in Latin America. In Latin America, it was like a relative, really new world. And when I found out that it was like about to study about strategy and technology, about project management and everything, about innovation projects. So I said, I want to go there. But you know, it was like a little obstacle that all the courses was in Swedish. So I didn't know how to speak a single word in Swedish.
Right.
So I said, well, I will learn in the road. So let's do it. So I went there without knowing anything about Swedish, just English and Spanish. So I had to learn. I mean, the first 3 months I failed everything. I couldn't understand the teachers, but then I learned and I recovered. migrate. So
wow. So you speak a little bit of Swedish or a lot?
Yes, I speak Swedish. A long time ago that I don't practice Swedish, but yes, I can manage. Yes,
how would you say hello and Good Friday to me in Swedish?
It will be hey and God fredag.
Ah, look at you. Yes. That's even more impressive. See, there we go. Something I did not know. So, all right. So let me ask you this. So during this journey, obviously you already told us, right, that from a very early age, you had a love of the sea, right? And you had an appreciation for like the mammal and the animal life that makes up our oceans and our waterways. So when you were studying, were you always studying both, you know, the innovation and entrepreneurship stuff and the sciences, right? Were you from the moment you left to start university, were you always focused on the sciences?
No. You know, the very first beginning, I was studying medicine, like the med school. Yeah. I was studying the med school for 1 year, but I had to drop it because, you know, at that time, it was like a really difficult personal situation. My mother, he got like a really huge depression because at that time she had a divorce. It was my parents' divorce. So
right.
I'm the oldest. And so I had to come back to Sinaloa. Sure. I was studying at Guadalajara. So I have to come back to Sinaloa. And then I have to study agribusiness, which is nothing to do with medicine. So, yes.
Yeah. So now we're leading up to kind of, we're going to start talking about your project a little bit here. But I want to make sure we understand. So after an incredible journey away, right, and then we come back, right, for normal human family reasons, and then you wind up studying kind of a completely different discipline, but you eventually found your way to the sciences and to biology and to kind of these things that are related to the environment, right? So you found, did you find that after you finished all your studies and as you began your professional life, or did you find that while you were still finishing your studies?
I found it earlier because, you know, I had always interest in this part of the marine sciences. So that was something that at that time it was my hobby and then become like my passion and then finally my way of living.
Right. So there you go. There's the segue. So now why don't you tell us about your project and your businesses, because this was the fascinating part. Like when you first started to describe to me the specific things that you were working on in the hallway conversation in English, I honestly had to stop you two or three times and say, I'm sorry, wait, can you repeat that? Like, I want to make sure I'm understanding the English. Like what you're working on? What? Like you're doing what?
Yes.
So please tell us how you got started in this field, and then tell us kind of what you're working on now.
Okay, so my company is a marine biotechnology company. The name of the company is Coco Chavita. I name it like that because it was the nickname of my two grandparents, Sorry. This company, it works with sea cucumbers. We completed the entire cycle, from culturing the sea cucumber till extracting the biotic compounds from it. So we're
literally growing and giving birth to populations of sea cucumbers and then extracting the value, the benefits of those out of them for the good of other purposes.
Yes, exactly. You know, because sea cucumber, it plays a role, really, really important role in the environment. It's the natural buffer in the sea. It has been studies showing that sea cucumber is the one preventing marine acidification. So imagine how important they are for the oceans. So we understood since the beginning that we needed to create technology for the future, of the project, because I mean a lot of sea cucumber populations in the world has been depleted because it's a highly demanded marine species in Asian markets. I think it's one of the most it's super pricey there. So
okay.
It's one of the few products in the world that the demand is higher than the offer. So yes, so imagine the market. There is Chinese business groups going everywhere trying to buy all CK Comfort that they can. So, and at that time, we realized that if we wanted to be successful in the future, we needed to create sustainable supply sources. So at the beginning, we were trying to do the same that the rest of the companies were doing, which is sexual reproduction techniques. But then we understood that if we wanted to go further, we have to make things different. So at that time, we created, we take the advantage that CK Comfort can regenerate itself. So we created a technology that instead of taking almost 2 years or more than 2 years to, depending the species, to get like an adult CK Comfort from the seed. In this case, we take the CK Comfort, we cut them, we nurturing the CK Comfort, and then in less than than 2 months, instead of having one CK Comfort, we have two CK Comforts. Wow. So this technology was recognized by FIO, by Alessandro Lovatelli, and also it was recognized by the Chinese Echinoderm Society, which depends from the Chinese Academy of Sciences there. So it's really good because we can borrow from the sea the CK Comfort. We can cut them. We can create like a genetically identical copy, and then we can work with the copy, not with the original. The original, we place them again in the sea. So,
oh, wow.
Yes.
So where along this amazing journey of yours, right, did you decide, okay, this is my thing. Like, I'm not just going to be a scientist researcher and sit in a lab all day and invent new cool technologies and sciences, but I'm gonna be entrepreneurial about this. Like, I'm gonna try and commercialize this and take this to the market. Like, when did you decide that? When did this little super smart girl from Sinaloa wake up one day in her journey and say, "Ah, I think I'm gonna be an entrepreneur"?
I think that, oh my God, it's just like circumstances of the life. It's not like I said, yeah, I want to do my own company and I'm going to do like business. It's a lot of factors. You know, for example, here in Mexico, you like a young woman and like an entrepreneur, you have like a lot of problems that you have to overcome. For example, if you are working as a, in the past, a few years ago, if you were working for a government university, you cannot do business. So it was prohibited by law. So I knew that if I was working as a university teacher, researcher, I couldn't do, I couldn't exploit all the potential that can have the CK Comfort.
Okay. So you knew, you felt because you were inside the system, you knew the system was limiting you. It was basically saying, like, if you're a scientific researcher at a university, you're not allowed to commercialize this.
And, exactly.
And so then you knew that. So now all of a sudden your options were getting narrowed for you.
Yes. Yes. And of course there are also gender limitations. Like, for example, if you're a female scientist working in the Mexican system, you cannot have as much access to financing, to grants, and to everything that like a male entrepreneur does. That, I mean, I had a lot of luck because at the end, I had access to all of it. I mean, I had access to grants, I had access to angel investment financing and everything. But, you know, I have to knock a lot of doors.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you talk a lot about this, and I mean, it's obviously it's part of who you are, right? But you talk a lot about the difficulties of being a female entrepreneur, right? The difficulties of being a female scientist and researcher in in Mexico in specific, but let's broaden it out, right? It would be true in just about every Latin American country, probably. And frankly, female entrepreneurship is, the difficulties and obstacles are true in the U.S., right? Where the statistics of the percentages of, you know, black or brown founders, founders of color, founders of color, and the percentage of venture capital or financial support that they get is like, you know, in the single digits. It's just tiny compared to the rest of it. But so you talk quite a bit about this. So I'm curious, like, do you feel like in your day to day, or when you're interviewed, or when you're on stage, do you feel like a sense of responsibility to your fellow female Mexicanas, to female Mexican entrepreneurs? Do you feel like you're a leader, and therefore you have to inspire them, or you have to give back to them, or are you just focused on yourself and your own work?
No, I think you have to give what you are receiving. I mean, for example, for me, I'm working with a lot of female organizations, not only Mexico level, but international. For example, I'm working with AMGE, which is the Mexican Association for Women Business. I'm also working with WPO, which is a women's president organization. I'm working with We Connect International, which is also another organization that promotes businesses with big corporations. So I'm working with them because I want to support and also to be supported by other female in business.
Yeah.
This is really important because, you know, you never know where you can meet someone that you can help or that she can help you back. So this is important because if you're by your own, yes, of course, you can make like a lot of business, you can get a lot of money and everything you can, but you have never going to have like a real impact. And in the future, you have to guarantee that, for example, I have two daughters, so I want them that they grow in a better place, in a place with more opportunities for them. So that's part of my commitment and my responsibility. So, you know, just to let you an example, a couple months ago, I went to Los Angeles to a woman president organization's meeting, the annual meeting, and I get to know a business woman there. Her name is Nina Vaca. She's from Ecuador. I don't know if you have heard about her. She's the CEO of Pineapple Group. She started her company with $300, and right now Pineapple Group is like less than a decade later is $2 billion company. So when we create that kind of examples here in Mexico, then I will know that we make that positive change that we need. I'm not talking about Mexico, but Latin America.
No, right. But, everywhere. You're setting the example. So let me ask you, you know, it's funny, you're still a relatively young woman, but it seems like you've been on this journey forever already, right? But you are still a young woman. Obviously now you tell us you're a mother of two young girls, which is incredible that you're doing all that. You're doing all that while being a mother. Right. I mean, that's gotta be an incredible part of your story in and of itself. Like how do you balance that?
Oh my God. It's really almost impossible to balance. I mean, I'm really lucky because I have the support from my husband. We are not the Mexican conventional family. He can work from home, so he's the one taking care more of the kids. So when another mother from my kids' school, they say, why the husband is the one taking care? And she's always in a trip or making business or whatever. It's non-conventional. So we have to deal with that. But you have to do it. If not, there is not going to be more examples that also this kind of family balance has to be performed. I try to be quality of time with my kids. I usually try to to get them to be with me when I'm when I go out for a trip. So usually they join me when they are not in the school. But overall, I teach them to love what I'm doing, you know, to transmit them my passion about what we are doing, and to teach them examples of how this little marine animal is changing the life of people, you know, because we are working, Sique Gomber has really amazing medical properties. The kind of collagen they have like a bioactive compound called frondocyte A, which is used for pancreatic cancer. So when I told them what are we doing and how we are changing the way that we are doing things, I think that they really understand, and they are more like they also love what we are doing.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. I mean, and that's, you're doing in your own home what you're doing in public as well, right? For mm-hmm. others, for others, other little daughters and other young ladies and other dreamers in Mexico, which is incredible. And I'm so proud, so proud.
But you know, it's not always easy. I remember when I was starting the company Coco Chavita, we had the opportunity to represent Mexico in a brokerage event in Brussels with the European Commission and everything. So there were like a really, really big Mexican companies like Pemex, like General Electric. It was Silanes Laboratories and so on. So really big and high reputation companies. So when they saw me, because I was just like starting the company, really small company, and then one guy from Pemex, he told me, you know why you are here? Your company is too small and you're really young. Who you sleep with? And I was, what?
Ouch.
So I was, what? Are you serious? I'm going to pretend I didn't listen to your question.
Right. That's got, but that happened. I mean, that's common, right? Unfortunately.
Yes. Unfortunately, it was common years ago. But right now, you know, we are really changing things here in Mexico right now.
Yeah. And that's what I was curious. I was saying before, like, you've been in this journey for a while, even though you're still a very young woman, obviously. Right. So what kind of progress are we making, Delia? Are we truly breaking down barriers for young people, for young women, not just, you know, and young men? Are we truly changing the culture? I mean, you've been at this journey since you left at 15 to go to study, right? 2005, you know, this is 13 years later. We're in 2018, almost 2020. There's so much technology that connects us, and supposedly it makes our lives better, and it opens the world to everybody. Like, are you seeing this progress in your day-to-day experiences?
Yes, of course. I mean, when I was abroad, I promised myself that I will go back and to change things in with the people that's around me. So I came back, and right now, for example, I participating in the board of science and technology from my state, and there has been a lot, a really hard work. I have to recognize Dr. Carlos Karam, which is the CEO of this initiative. But right now, only to give you an example, we have changed so much things here in Sinaloa that, for example, in the little town that I was born, we have university there, a technological university.
Wow.
In this state, all scientists have the opportunity to go to a patent subsidized by the state government. Also, if you had a project, a research project, is easier to get a grant. Also, we promote collaboration with private industry. We also created some tools. So just graduated engineers master in science and PhDs to incorporate to industry. But it was like a really big gap that this talent that we were creating, they find no job in the private industry.
Right. So in these programs that you're seeing, and by the way, I agree. Mm-hmm. I just in the last 2.5, almost 3 years, I'm seeing progress, right? We're seeing the grassroots level of progress. But so in these programs and in these studies at the university that now exists in Sinaloa, and I'm sure you give many speeches or you're in many meetings or panels, are you seeing more and more young women? Are you seeing more young women participate?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Participation rate is increasing a lot.
That's
and
great.
Even in the government, the next government, equity, gender, is going to be really, half of the board is female.
Ah, okay. Yes. So we're continuing to make progress regardless of the politics, regardless of transitions.
Yes.
We're generally on a good trajectory moving in the right direction.
Yes. That we are moving in the right direction. A lot of women, they are contributing their time, their money, and their efforts in order to create more and more and more success stories.
Let me ask you this about your project first. I want to give you a chance to kind of talk to whomever winds up listening to this, right? And so, with all the success you've had, I obviously know that we're entrepreneurs. We're always constantly trying to grow. We're constantly trying to make a bigger impact. So what would be two things right now? I don't want to call them obstacles, but let's call them what are two things, two priorities that are really important for your company to go to the next level that you need, right? Do you need more financial support? Do you need more partners? Do you need more foreign government involvement? What would be two things for your particular company that you need to achieve in the next 6 months to a year to really elevate the company?
Yes. So right now we are in a very critical time. It's not just about, as you said, financing is really, really important. It's not just about to have a groundbreaking technology that is going to change the field of the marine biotechnology industry, but it's about to have enough resources to reach the market. Fortunately, right now we are consolidating a global cluster where we are going to be working with sea cucumbers in French Polynesia, Canada, Central America, Portugal, and I think that this is going to be known for being really a global initiative. Right now, we are talking with some VCs and more angel investors because, and also with the local government, because it's not, to create these products for pharma and cosmetic industry is not cheap. It requires huge investments, but also is going to cause a really high impact.
So if I heard two summaries there, I heard one, obviously, we need financial support, continuous, ongoing financial support to take this to the next level.
Yes.
And then two, we need continuous strategic partnerships and relationships
partnership and relationships. Yeah. They are super important, but also it's super important to have a world class talent team.
Sure.
I think that one of the most important success factors in any business, I'm not only talking about science, but any other business venture, is the team. You have to have a deep understanding of market factors. You have to have a concerted focus on of the importance of delivery, what people is needing. Maybe you are getting a really amazing product, but right now there is no one that is interested to buy you.
That's great. And that's actually a good segue, because one of the things I want to, as we wrap up here with the last couple of questions, one of the things I was going to ask if you could do for our audience is obviously, you know, one of the whole points of this podcast is to connect people, right? I talk often in our business about building bridges and not walls and helping to, I'm a huge believer in that if we just expose one another to each other, we will learn that we have so many more things in common. So if you can help me to help our audience, right?
Yes.
Basically, you and I are going to mentor some people right now, right?
Yes.
And if you can help me, what would you say? And I think you just said one of them that is a key. But if you had to give three very simple, succinct pieces of advice to any entrepreneur or aspiring entrepreneur. One, I think I heard you say is obviously, you know, build a great team, surround yourself with good people. But what would be the three things that you would say, like every person who's thinking about being an entrepreneur or is a current entrepreneur needs to focus on to build towards their dreams?
I mean, one very important thing is resilience. You have to be really resilient to the media. You know, you have to be like the most hard bacteria in the world. You have to behave like a bacteria. And you have to be resilient because, you know, you are going to receive a lot of punches and a lot of no's and you are going to bring you down. But you have to be resilient enough to raise again and to think that every no and every single no that you receive is part of the yes.
Wow. That's fine. Okay. So one is resilience. What would two more be? Oh, did we lose you?
Thing is.
Oh, there you are.
Yes.
Here we go. So two more would be what?
Yes. The other thing, even it sounds like everyone says the same. It's not about the money. Is about the idea you have and how you can crystallize this idea and to be able to market it. That's one of the most important things.
Personal resilience, focusing on the idea and the commercial, the marketability of it, not just on the money. And then what would be the last piece of advice that we would give any aspiring young female entrepreneur in Mexico or anywhere in the world?
To love what you do. I mean, if you love what you do, if you are truly passionate about what you do, then you won't feel so much. Because, you know, I hear a lot of entrepreneurs to come in, you know, I have a lot of stress. I have like 1,000 people calling me, like 1,000 emails and whatever, and a lot of things. And they are truth because, you know, I live the same. But when you love what you do, this is part of the things that is like raising a kid. You know that you have to change diapers, that you have to deal with diseases and that. But this part that you but you do it because you love them. You can abandon them in the street, so you have to take care of them.
I love that. I mean, love really is the magic formula that binds us together, not just in life, obviously, right? But even in our business lives. And I think we forget that too often sometimes. All right. So as we close, remember we started in the beginning. I say, my aspiration is to tell the uncommon stories of common people, right? And in faraway places to start to connect the world. And so this story today, which has been amazing for you to share. You've been so honest and so transparent, right? You've shared details of your family history and life and all the things you've overcome, which is incredible. I'm grateful for that. But it's a human story, right? It really is. It's not just about your business. This isn't just about the project or your science. So I want to close with something a little silly and kind of fun, just to remind us that we're people at the end of the day.
So are there
two things that no one in the world knows about you? Is there a crazy talent that you have, or is there some funny skill that you have, or is there something that you've done or that like very few people know about? If you have one or two things that you could like give us a secret funny story about yourself that I think it would be cool for everybody to know.
Yes. I'm sorry, but my funny story has to be with the sea cucumbers.
That's okay.
I'm sea cucumber lover, so
you are.
Yes. So, you know, very few people in the world knows that just like a couple of years ago, I had like a really significant dream that I was dreaming that, you know, I was with my hanging with my family and suddenly it was a tsunami.
Okay.
It was like a tsunami coming and I couldn't think so much just to hold to something, not to get not to get with the water. So
I feel like this is like the Nicole Kidman movie that I saw. So let's say you're having a dream about a tsunami. You're with your family.
Yes, it was everything. Everything was devastated. You know, my family gone, my home gone, everything gone. So I was like, you know, at that moment of the dream, I was really, really sad. And I remember that I have like a really deep feeling of lost. But at that time, I felt something in my feet. So I just looked down and I see a sea cucumber. So, I took the sea cucumber and I hooked with the sea cucumber. And I was thinking, okay, at least I have the sea cucumber.
Wow. The sea cucumber to the rescue. I feel like someday when someone writes this movie, I'm telling you, that opening scene is going to be you at like an 8-year-old with your feet in the sand and the sea cucumber. Because I'm feeling like Delia is like the little sea cucumber of Mexico. Right.
Yeah.
And in so many ways, like you and the sea cucumber's place in its ecosystem and in our world are you're both unique and you're both powerful and you're both really important to the whole ecosystem. But yet when you started as just one little girl in the coastal lands of Sinaloa and one little sea cucumber. Right. I mean, and you've come full circle. So I'm actually not surprised that you're dreaming about sea cucumbers at all.
Yes.
That's incredible.
No, even my husband says that he's never going to put me to make a choice between sea cucumbers.
Right.
And
he's a smart man.
He knows that I'm going to choose sea cucumbers.
That is a good man. Let's keep him around, right? So yes. All right. So we love to connect people. So before we let you go here, and again, thank you so much. Before we let you go, Let's let people know how they can connect with you or find you on social media or in email, reach out to you. Because we, again, like you said, we're producing this podcast because we never know who might listen, right?
You know,
and so it might be people that can help that can help you, or maybe people that you can help or that we can help. So how can we find you on social media? Like, what's your social media handle and or that stuff?
Okay. I personally don't have social media.
Okay.
Okay. That's, you know, I have always said, I'm going to open my Facebook. But no time, really no time.
That's okay. So, does the business have a website?
Yes, it is cocochavita.com. And my email, it is D from Delia, Cimental, like my last name, dcimental@cocochavita.com.
Perfect. That way people can reach out and find you.
Yes. Because
I think I'm convinced that there will be people who want to reach out and connect with you, because I know you've inspired me. You've inspired me mostly to believe that everything is possible. And you inspired me with your energy and your passion and your intelligence when I met you in Chihuahua. And now, after having spent this time with you today, you've inspired me that, you know, that my work, that our work in Latin America is important, because I know if we just keep going out there and we keep talking about how important mentorship is and how important entrepreneurship is, and if we keep helping the governments and the universities and the corporates and the venture capitalists to understand this and do more, I know, because of what your story tells us, that there are little girls standing on the beaches or in the cities or in the parks. Mm-hmm. All over Latin America, there are little boys that are in the schools and the classrooms who just need to be given the chance, and they need to be encouraged. And if you can do it, Delia, everybody can do it. So that's incredible.
That's right. Yes.
I'm so grateful. Thank you so much. Too. I know you have a busy day. You. Have a wonderful weekend, and thank you again for all thank your you. Positive energy.
Thank you, Rob.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Have a nice weekend. Bye-bye.
Wow, wow, wow. How incredible was that journey that Delia just shared with us, from the beaches of Sinaloa, Mexico, to Sweden and points in between, learning new languages, scientific breakthroughs, motherhood, being a wife, being a powerful female entrepreneur and activist in Mexico. Just an incredible journey. So grateful. She taught us some amazing lessons. If you can't believe that anything's possible after listening to that story, I don't know who can. And most importantly, I think she taught us that you got to love the work. You have to really, really love what you do if you want to succeed in life. So you know that this show is all about connecting and exposing us to one another and building bridges. And so you can find us, share us, follow us, like us, subscribe to these podcasts. Please, please do. You can find us on social media at I Am Rob Ryan on Twitter and Instagram. You can find us online at IamRobRyan.com. And again, you can subscribe or share on Spotify, on iTunes, on Google Play, and a bunch of other different platforms. So thanks so much for being a part of this journey. And I hope that we took you to a faraway place and showed you a little bit of what's possible through the eyes of another human being. Peace.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.